Warning, this podcast contains bad words and stories about drugs and sex and overthrowing the government. Proceed with caution. Okay. Thank you. And now on to our show. Wake up, brother, we got nothing to do. Let's go outside, just me and you, and build a fort. We'll pack a lunch, won't be home till after dark. Then after dinner we can sneak back out. You know that high school girl I've been telling you about? Well, she gets undressed about a quarter to nine, and we can watch her do it from the big old pine next door. She got a room on the second floor. Well, looks like another fucked up day in paradise.
Welcome to the Daughter of God cast, episode 032, Waves. Last week, my life energy was shunted to an immune response, so episode 031 was a slurpy, sniffling mess, and very late. If you survived listening last week, I'm happy to report that I'm now back and firing on almost all cylinders, game to deliver a coherent and distilled episode, or a fair simulation of one. I must have watched Transcendent Man on or before July 17th, 2012, the day I wrote to Ray Kurzweil, asking if he had any open source tools for reconstructing his dad, and wishing him a safe arrival at the Singularity. With this podcast, I am archiving enough of me to reconstruct a reasonably accurate facsimile of Dan Kelly, aka Shri Fuji Split, if not the me. So when Ray does eventually release his open source Persona Resurrection Toolkit, these episodes could be the raw material for your very own version of myself. Oh, what I do for you people! The Daughter of Godcast podcast is available as an audio/video version and an audio-only version. The audio-only version should be all you need, at least that's my quest. So I occasionally have to be a bit virtuosic at translating images into words, especially when expounding on the joys of visuality. We're hacking that old adage, a picture is worth a thousand words. These episodes are usually around 4,000 plus words, but you're definitely seeing more than four measly mental pictures. Airplane, dubbed in Spanish. Posted on August 30th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. This is a true story. A man lies in a vaporous clawfoot bathtub watching the movie Airplane, dubbed in Spanish. He doesn't speak Spanish, but can recognize a few words here and there. He hasn't seen Airplane in any language for probably 20 years. The experience is strangely satisfying, mystical. For him, the movie carries deep associations to youth. He was in his late teens when it was released. A good movie, surreal and goofy. Iconic scenes well remembered, and yet they are inaccessible. Watching it in Spanish is like having a stroke. The actor's lines are almost intelligible. He sort of remembers what they should be saying, and yet the humor zooms by. It's all familiar and yet deliciously remote, alien. The loss can be savored because it's just a game. It's a choice. Something to do while having a hot soak. Revisiting a warmly familiar story told in a language that he doesn't know. Just like life. How often moments with friends or family are relived in an unknown tongue, with new characters and misremembered history. We are only half erased, incompletely duplicated, partially obscured with mirrors and smoke. Yummy! This is so good! So good! Features versus benefits. In episode 030, I tediously explain the mechanics of rotoscoping, totally neglecting the second rule of sales. Talk benefits, not features. Who cares about what rotoscoping is? Tell us why it is cool. This podcast is expertly crafted to reach an audience that actually knows how to live, geeky obsessions notwithstanding. I imagine my audience sipping homebrew gruit while reclining in bippling hot springs, walking their unusually intelligent tabby cats on shadow-dappled byways, or reading Andrew Weinstein by the glow of beeswax candles. Living large. Side by side, the two plucky visual effects artists plied their ephemeral trade. Just past their flat screens, a laughing lake, either placid and ripple-free or methodically waving against a rocky beach under cloud-scudded or burning blue sky. That was Ben and I until September 2012, before he returned to Western Michigan University to continue his debt accumulation, a chronic symptom of higher education in the alleged real world. So why is rotoscoping cool? Why drudge away for hours, days, tracing live action? When Christina opens the cabin door for Uncle Joe, he seems to be gently shimmering with red light. He's a sunset, lurid and fascinating. His noir suit and fedora, his near incestuous leer, are juxtaposed by the sacred slash profane radiance of capiche. The hallway is red too, lit by red bulbs, yet this light upon his body dances, celebrates. Perhaps he helps us see the living energy of light for the first time. Or is this her point of view? Are Christina's eyes brimming? Is she seeing through tears? The beloved and enigmatic uncle, back from the spooky nethers, is haloed with her intense emotion. That description was 105 words, 1/10 of 1,000. Not an inadequate audio homage to the rotoscope-enabled image, because the root of all art is feeling. Not an inadequate audio homage. I love these tangly word phrases that I make myself say. I write this stuff. It's tongue twisters. So Betty Botter bought a bit of butter and made her batter better. It's fine when you got it all wired up in your brain, like you've said it 1,000 zillion times. But now I'm saying this for the first time. You ready? Or well, not the first time. Not as many times as Betty Botter bought a bit of better butter. Joe's back from the dead hallway shimmer is subtle. The audience is not necessarily even going to register this as a visual effect. I'm only helping them to see what they want to see. Goosed up a tad. As you may know, posted on September 1st, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. I'm proud of my FBI record. To clarify, I've never worked for the FBI. What I mean is that the FBI has a file on me. Not only do they have a file on me, but it's a secret. That's why I'm proud. That they would worry enough about me to have a secret file. I'm not being exactly fair, because the story I'm going to tell you has nothing to do with my secret FBI file or how I came to learn about it. I only mention my file because it's eerily unrelated to what follows, which is the essence of what follows. I've been reviewing James's letter to his Kickstarter backers, and it's about 12:15 a.m. or so. I'm in the hammock that stretches across the studio area, tip-tapping away at the laptop. I keep whiffing the faint odor of not unpleasant burning, like aromatic wood smoke. Perhaps the pot of chaga has cooked down to its chunks and is beginning to carbonize. Or maybe something worse. There's food on the counter, leftover pancakes and watermelon from dinner with Luke and Abigail. Ready to browse without remorse, and feeling a bit parched too, I slide out of suspension, balancing the laptop and its swivel base like a svelte titanium pizza box. Clunk onto the floor and stiff but serviceable standing joints. Into the kitchen, and no, the chaga is off. My imagination, or crosstalk from an adjacent dimension more likely. Turn to the counter, and the crash-landed dinner. The kamal has a few pancakes, dryish but beginning to wilt with the trapped humidity. I extract one onto the bare counter, but no. Watermelon. That's the ticket. Returning the pancake to its dark lair, I reach for the less than ideal serrated knife, start to saw waxy rind, and then it happened. The eerily unrelated event. Out of nowhere, out of an unknown, unsuspected aspect, I spoke the words, Mitt Romney. It came out clear and calm, like a statement, without any emotion or context, just Mitt Romney. I can't say it was a message, a sending, or a channeling, because it was completely and utterly devoid of any content. As if I wanted to hear myself say it. The simple music of speech. But why those words? Why that name? Why not that name? Is not that name as equally sacred as Earth, as Philip K. Dick, or Watermelon? Sure, that's all well and good, but the whole incident is still a bit creepy. To be surprised by myself is not an everyday thing, more dreamlike than waking, methinks. In conclusion, I offer these words. Mitt Romney. Say it. See if it sounds like the thrum and rush of the cosmos to you. Being. When I play at being thought-free, I arrive at an inexplicable state. Words can't touch where I am, and what I thought to be my life turns out to be a map. Being is way wider than what we think, write, or speak. Which is why I am never trying to say anything here, make sense, or tell the truth on the Daughter of God cast, because the noise my words make is more than mere meaning. Daughter of Godcast, podcasting about podcasting about podcasting. Have a nice day. Posted on September 27, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. In Stamford, Connecticut, around the late 70s, there was a slightly shabby theater we used to drive by on our way downtown, the Arts Cine. They never advertised the features. The kiosk remained unchanged for years. In big, bold letters, it read, "Have a nice day. See a movie." I grew up driving by that sign. I never really noticed the rated X until I was in my teens. Then my friends and I would giggle in the back seat, not really knowing what it was all about, except that parents weren't willing to explain. The sign obviously had a profound influence on me as a kid. Have a nice day. See a movie. That's what stuck. All you need is a question mark. On September 25th, I acquired spiritual stewardship of the Wonderland sign from John Wagman himself via email. Mutterings from the locals about the derelict question mark building being sold or demolished. Clearly, the sign should be snatched. Historic preservation, echoes of a bygone age. Wonderland was an environmentally oriented art gallery launched by Wagman in the early 90s, coinciding with an improbable influx of artists into Little Benzie County. The gallery sign was just a giant jagged question mark with the planet Earth as the dot, 12 feet high by 8 feet wide. John stole the color scheme from a swatch of retro fabric he liked. His buddy Mark Whiting, later of Iron Giant and Finding Nemo fame, had executed Wagman's design with matched house paint. As soon as the gallery started making a little headway, the landlord raised the rent. Frustrated, John gave up and hit the road. The cantankerous landlord removed the lower panel of the Wonderland sign, the panel of earth, leaving only the swirling curlicue above and the rough 2x4 armature below, his revenge on the town of Honor for real or imagined slights. The building and remains of the sign were an iconic feature of Honor, Michigan for a decade, their story and significance eventually forgotten. I had been given stewardship over the energetic essence of the sign, the soul of Wonderland. But how to nab the physical incarnation? In plain sight or by the dark of night? And where was the third panel? The earth. I like writing fluid words. I like writing words that fit together nicely and musically. I like writing those kinds of words. The meanings have sort of a rhythm to them. I like that. If I've got those kinds of words, then speaking them is a blast. I love to say those words once I have them for stories, for other podcasts. I really want to tell the editors that that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for words that I'm excited to say. Nuclear power. Through the summer and fall, Fukushima was often on my radar. As a 2-year veteran of wild open water, I was an interested party. I was feeling personally responsible for the vitality of my big freshwater lake, flanked as she was by dozens of Fukushima-esque blunders in the making. I had sailed by several nuke plants. The abrupt end of Around Lake Michigan's second expedition was presided over by a brooding relic of atomic misogyny. Were they alive and sentient? Ancient, malevolent dinosaurs sleeping. I was making a post-apocalyptic movie at the front of the 21st century, while entertaining the possibilities for preventing, fluidly sidestepping, or remediating the apparent apocalypse in progress. Two projects, one aim. Fukushima in the USA. Posted on August 6th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. Arnie Gunderson. 23 plants in the USA identical to Fukushima, two near Chicago, Dresden and Quad City. Neither are on Lake Michigan. Severe abnormalities found in Fukushima butterflies by Nick Crumpton, BBC News, 13 August 2012. The study found that mutation rates were much higher among butterfly collected near Fukushima. A nice day. Posted on September 4th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. Seems almost wrong to be staring at screens when it's so lovely outside. Implementing Roto, Roto, Roto. That's what has to be done as I drive forward on Dog's conclusion. This repetitive visual work leaves great chunks of my brain unoccupied, so I've started research on nukes for the proposed future expedition of around Lake Michigan. I've been meaning to aggregate Fukushima news, and so here's some of that.
A huge tsunami hit the island and wiped out those nuclear power plants. This is not just Fukushima Daiichi. The wave hit Fukushima Daiichi, Fukushima Daini, Onagawa, and Tokai. And all of them were damaged by the same tsunami. About a week after the accident, I was on CNN, and I told John King that it wasn't about the earthquake, and it wasn't about the tsunami wiping out the diesels that knocked out the Fukushima Daiichi reactors. We brought up a satellite video that showed the damage to the pumps along the ocean. And as you can see here, it's just rubble. Now, these pumps were relatively strong. They were designed to withstand earthquakes and anything Mother Nature could throw at them. And as you can see, the space along the coast, it's just a scrapyard of twisted metal. You know, in your car, you have a pump on the front of the engine called a water pump. If the water pump fails, your engine dies. Well, that's really what happened at Fukushima Daiichi. Those pumps along the water provide cooling water to the diesels, just like the pump on the front of your engine on your car. And without those pumps operating, the diesels were doomed to fail anyway. It doesn't matter if those diesels were 100 feet in the air. The pumps along the water were destroyed. And that is the real root cause of the accident at Fukushima Daiichi. We call that the loss of the ultimate heat sink. And the key word there is ultimate. You need the ocean to pull the water out of the nuclear reactor to keep it cool. But that same water has to cool the diesels to make that happen. The diesels would not have worked even if they hadn't been flooded. Now, this problem that we call the loss of the ultimate heat sink didn't just happen at Fukushima Daiichi 1, 2, 3, and 4. All six reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi site experienced it, but also at the Fukushima Daini site, the Onagawa site, and the Tokai site. Between those four sites, there was 14 nuclear reactors. They had 37 diesels. Nine of them failed because of the tsunami. Those are the ones at Fukushima Daiichi 1, 2, 3, and 4. But 15 others failed too. Mainstream media isn't talking about that. The nuclear industry is not talking about that either. The diesels were not flooded. What happened was the pumps along the ocean were destroyed, not just for Fukushima Daiichi 1, 2, 3, 4, but for at every one of those sites, at least one diesel was knocked out because it couldn't be cooled.
Waves. Wisdom laps upon my consciousness, little waves curling in and then receding. I knew things and then forgot, knew and then forgot, each time the knowing lasting a little longer. I had learned that the superpower of generosity, if paired with consciousness, could yield boons. Otherwise, nightmares. I had learned that I could give myself permission to feel love, happiness, and exhilaration anytime, anywhere, not just after achievement or when conditions cooperated. Way back in the 90s, I had played in the waves of Shakti Gawain's creative visualization, manifesting misplaced car keys and wallets more times than I care to mention. Here's two 2012 excerpts illustrating a wave rolling in and then out again. 09/05/12. Visualization is not about the future. Deep Archives, September 5th, 2012. Visualization is not about the future. It's about having our life in the now, becoming adept at being open and feeling love and adventure in the moment. Not projecting some about to be, but knowing and feeling what we truly are, want, in the present. Visualizing is experiencing, not simulating or even practice or rehearsal, but being. With all my wondrous potential and perception, just be. Then want and fulfillment together. Think about it. Normal orgasms are transient. To get the most, we want to know how to stretch them, perhaps stretch them into infinity, where they never started and can never end. To exist as infinite is to have our bliss instantaneously and always. Snip. To live with pain teaches us to cherish feeling just plain comfortable. Once we know this, why not just skip the pain? Think that any system of thought can be infallible? How can one camera show every angle? Though profoundly liberating, even science is just a viewpoint. To truly know, we must go beyond systems. This is mysticism. Sitting in a room is quite boring. Meditating, contemplating, even listening to me is a waste of your time. Get out and do something. Find out who you are. Projects in Progress, Chapter 2, posted on September 24th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. The current push is to get the to-do list to a manageable size. This means the plans for any given day are actually achievable. Obligations are being consistently met. No new obligations are taken on unless they are strategically essential. They get me radically closer to an existing outcome. All current open projects that can't rapidly be completed must be stabilized by bringing them to a state and or location where they can remain indefinitely without deterioration, danger, waste, or getting in the way of other projects. In the future, stabilization is built in by projecting phases for projects. Here's the new protocol, immediately followed by a list identifying projects and what's needed to stabilize them. Project protocol. Start and finish projects in manageable stages. Don't leave a stage partially complete. No more than three projects open, and only for the following reasons: waiting on parts, waiting on assistance, engineering and research, surprise reprioritization, need sleep, emergency. Order projects according to weather, availability of parts, master plan, primary categories, current priorities. Don't start new projects to procrastinate on older projects. Make time to play. Pure play. Snip. September 5th's visualization is not about the future. Reveals the moment as the font of creation. In contrast to goal setting, planning, and effort. That wave had washed over me before, and would again, until eventually, I am as you hear and see me now, wonderfully wet and slippery. In Projects in Progress, Chapter 2, I was heavy into goal setting, planning, and effort. Still damp from the wave a few weeks earlier, but drying off, becoming future-focused, action-oriented. Notice, though, that my action plan was informed by feelings. Manageable size, actually achievable, obligations consistently met, no new obligations, stabilize, don't start new projects to procrastinate on old projects. These directives are clearly about reducing my stress, feeling easy and more free. Play, pure play, is even more juicy, not just lowering pain, but increasing pleasure. The waves wash up, splash us a bit, and then fall back. Again. Up, 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 up. What I Want to Be When I Grow Up, posted on October 7th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. That's a question for little kids. I'll be 50 next May. So what's the point of asking this question now? Isn't it too late? Didn't I squander my youth? And if I haven't grown up by now, then chances are I never will, right? These are antique cliches. Everything is about to change if we can steward the global life support system. Assuming sustainable civilizations, it's highly appropriate to ask more momentous questions. What I want to ask is, what's living all about? What's the point? To raise vivid replacements? To expand consciousness? To have fun? As a good disciple of Joe Campbell, rather than look for meaning, I'm interested in the experience of being human. Anyone who's tripped knows that choice determines experience. What's my life about? Or better, what might I like my life to be about? What feeling and flavors, what insights would I like to have? What outcomes would I like to manifest? In summary, rather than search for the meaning of life, of my life, I constantly choose what it is to be me. So we come to the question of the morning, my life's work. A life's work is usually thought of as the stuff left behind, results, contribution. Results flow from process. So a life's work is a continuum of process, experience, and results. Running time backward, results could be melted down into process, just as heat applied to ice will yield water. Following this metaphor into the ridiculous dimensions, the forms of ice can be many, but water is universal. Can all results be achieved by just one practice? Are there many paths to achieving one unique result? Swami used to refute the many paths up the mountain metaphor. There is only one path! Anyway, that's another post. So my life's work is not only about results, but what I want to experience along the way. This is critically important when I think about making more movies, or games, or the next thing. The categories are themselves fluid. Last night, I watched Indie Game, the movie. The shots of designers staring at code on the screen gave me a little thrill. I wrote games professionally for a while, deploying them as interactive installations at a local museum. They lived there for several years and engaged a couple hundred thousand people. That was fun. I continue to hire roto artists for Dog. And while glancing over FX PhD for the latest courses, I started wondering how to identify the core skills for my future, which begged the question, what do I want to experience in my future? I know what I like, but are there other things that I might like that I haven't yet experienced? What's the ultimate Dan Kelly palette? Huge immortality. First, back to the fundamentals. Is 50 too old to start a life? Have I already used up my chance? I've observed two drawbacks with how others age. One, becoming rigid in thought and thus frightened of consequence. And two, losing physical flexibility, strength, vigor, and beauty. I feel very grateful to know that these are not inevitable. To live otherwise. Living forever scares some people. Perhaps the prospect of indefinitely prolonging the horror show that is their life drives the fear. Trapped in dire circumstance, a bad marriage, shitty job, ignorance, poverty, crazy parents, disease, injury, forever? Yikes. I had a bad marriage, followed by prolonged fallout post-divorce, chronic illness and depression. Years lost in grief and pain. I can relate to despair. I've been there. Hard work and good luck helped me find my way back home. I now have a pretty intriguing life and a body I enjoy. Having a long, long life is very attractive to me. If Kurzweil is right, and I make it to 2023, I might be able to live indefinitely, even if he's not. I've learned a lot about slowing and even backing up the biological clock. I can do things with my body that fit people 20 years younger can't. I expect at least another 30 years of robust function, even sans the effing singularity. I think about being 50 as sort of a fantasy scenario. I find myself with experience, resources, confidence, knowledge, and health, with prospects for more of the same being very good. Maybe the first 50 were just setting the stage. Perhaps my unique Gaian contribution requires a serious foundation. Or maybe I was just a scallywag and a shirker. The point is, I feel excited and a bit in awe about designing my future, my presence as an artist, and channels of expression. Ephemeral technology, live performance, culture hacking, all of the above. Super meat. An extended introduction. Now to business. An assessment of my capacities is in order, and I want to know more about what I don't know. What the hell is possible in VFX? How will I dance with digital technology? Identifying the practices I really enjoy. What would I dearly love to be better at? What change I want to see in my world? Seems clear that I'm good at many different things. I have excellent luck overall. These are the categories to search on. Begin. Check out these svelte goals from 2012 for the future. I didn't even need to snip anything. Trusting that everything's in the emotional escrow and only trotting out the shiniest baubles. We were learning, getting the hang of this reality thing. Thank you for listening to my podcast. December 2012. Posted on October 9th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. Specifically, December 15th, 2012. What I want to have accomplished, that is, what I want to experience. Dog is done. Pretty much good enough. 80% of awesome. Doesn't suck. Watchable. Fun throughout. Even stellar at times. Screeners going out to festivals. The rest of December is lessons learned and consolidation of all resources. Archives. More about feelings. A robust, passive solar greenhouse that can handle winter wind and the weight of snow and ice while harvesting heat for the casa and sunlight for green beings. More about feelings. Ready to take on some basic jobs and pay off debt. NMC Extended Ed at Up North. Push the VFX angle around the state, what we feel truly competent to do. Editorial. Small. Low commitment. Grab bags and caches ready. Plenty of food and fuel. Car solid. Consistent practice of yoga, tai chi, and stunts from October 15th through. Picking up dance and strength again. Health solid. Feel good. Reliable performance. Endurance and balance. The latter half of 2012 was a waking up and up. Blog posts splitting along the seams and light pouring out. Let us sit in zazen. Not quite zazen. There we go. Happy zazen. Appropriate the superorganism. Posted on October 13th, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. October 13th, 2012, approximately 7:30 a.m. After dog, then what? What do I want to do? FXPhD, fxphd.com, and widening my horizons, knowing what I don't know. After taking the VFX supervisor course, it turns out that I am naturally doing what the big kids do and finding out what they know. I may be groping in the dark, but so are they. An opportunity. The big kids are groping in the dark? In spite of ridiculous amounts of money to hire gangs of artists, the result is trite. E.g., Hunger Games, Prometheus. The VFX in Hunger Games were okay, not groundbreaking or even very compelling. In fact, the dogs were downright bad. The movie had some beautiful shots, sure, and moments of fun, but I was lost, lost, lost in a corn maze of mediocrity. The curse of the big studio daunts these creators. They may have all the keenest stuff, but perhaps the very nature of the process dooms the product. Ridley Scott gets a lot of credit for Alien, but perhaps it was the very limitations of production that made it great. A stellar cast and a fiery director who did, perhaps accidentally, the right things to get them there. Perhaps bigness is its own liability. The production of Alien cost $11 million, $34 million in 2012 dollars. But how does that compare with today's budgets for features with serious effects? The studios in England, Shepperton Studios and Bray Studios, were they big studios? Did the production dominate them? Checking out the handy list from thinkprogress.org, we can see the revenue for more recent releases in the Alien franchise steadily going down as the budgets went up. Bigger budget, less box office? Alien 1979. Budget, $34.8 million in 2012 dollars. Domestic and international box office, $331.5 million in 2012 dollars. Aliens 1986. Budget, $38.72 million in 2012 dollars. Domestic and international box office, $274 million in 2012 dollars. Alien 3, 1992. Budget, $81.8 million in 2012 dollars. Domestic and international box office, $261.2 million in 2012 dollars. Alien Resurrection, 1997. Budget, $100 million in 2012 dollars. Domestic and international box office, $230.5 million in 2012 dollars. Prometheus, budget estimated at $100 to $150 million. October 13th, 2012, at 11:05 p.m. I just watched Prometheus. What shite. Theory supported. October 13th, 2012, 7:30 a.m. I am one to talk hoo-ha. I haven't made anything really, even anything that sucks. But if I really believed my post about health and the approaching singularity, and if Jeff is right, and it's storytelling, capital S, that makes the human species a superorganism, then the horizon stretches. At slightly shy of 50, I'm just getting started. Meanwhile, we are also cracking the door on expressions with another FX PhD course, Awakening the Sleeping Giant Within, Who Likes to Code. The spreadsheet thing is not trivial. Sheena, the VFX supervisor, and John Montgomery did a huge intro spiel about the planning and budgeting of a VFX project, and it was chock full of planning slash projection spreadsheets and databases that were of the VFX director and producer's own making. Anyone remember my prototyping a cost estimating spreadsheet? Reinventing the wheel. Sheena herself doesn't come with her own number crunching toolset. And why is that? I'll just have to ask her online. If I want to breathe my full being, I've got to be able to make tools, just like I can fabricate gear gizmos or draw storyboards. Prediction and project management are pretty fundamental to getting where we want to go. So a database like FileMaker Pro versus a spreadsheet. What about being able to break these open? I can imagine a tool including true coding that can express itself as a spreadsheet or database. I suppose I need a better understanding of these two types of applications and the sort of viewports they are, vaguely recalling Fred Offline's metaphor. Because with open source apps like OpenOffice or NeoOffice, I could potentially pop the hood, switch some wires around, and fire the whole thing back up again. That's the true potential of open source. Standing on the shoulders of giants, taking a thing that already exists, tons of fantastic infrastructure, and owning it. Snip. How to finish this movie. Exactly where to step, so far as we can see, and manifesting the rest of the path after that. Do I really need or want another apprentice or intern? I certainly want the possibility of another Ben Woody calling me. Maybe that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, but if I could cultivate, what would that look like? My God, it's full of stars. My God, I'm building infrastructure to become an agent of the sustainable superorganism. Appropriate the superorganism. Hijack the superorganism. I am God's plan for the planet. This is cool. Appropriate the superorganism can mean both take it over or make it suitable to the circumstances. The circumstances are a global life support system, a web of species. I mean both. World domination through art. Art and USA funding is why the Nazis got as far as they did. They were a bunch of reality hackers and gulp artists. What would have happened if he'd stayed a painter? He switched to performance, and the Third Reich and Holocaust was a show that everyone is still talking about. 70 years later, he's an icon, mythic almost. We know he wasn't the son of God because unlike Jesus, we've got him on film. He loved movies and Leni Riefenstahl. Uh-oh. This is a very dark road we travel, we creators. This is a riff on the documentary Architecture of Doom, for those who haven't seen. I don't agree with a dismissive wiki summary. It's a profound insight into art making generally, a cautionary tale. Why do we want to discount Hitler's artistic prowess? Because he was such a fucker? Sure, assert that his aesthetic was flawed, mass murder, but why that he was an amateur painter? Why do we want to say that evil and art are mutually exclusive? If we imagine that art is only the domain of the righteous and humane, we do so at our own peril. We are all Hitler, potentially. He started out just like most humans, a little kid who was loved and was lonely, who laughed and dreamed. Then what? There's the story. To imagine he is not our brother is to reprise his horror show. So, appropriate the human superorganism. And what is our sense of appropriate? Vidi well, brother. Consider carefully what we propose for the world. Look within. Realize that there could be ovens and vengeance weapons just around the corner. What's this all for? This isn't quite an abstraction and thought experiment. I recognize myself as a wild card. I feel super alive, sparkling with power. I strive to organize and deploy my power, to be what I am and perhaps change the world, to free the prison planet, to swap awakening for suicide. With art, I might someday appropriate the superorganism, just like Hitler. October 13th, 2012. Evening again. Okay, so here's the list of key topics upcoming. Repeating the two from above. How to hire artists, version 2.0. How to finish dog, step by step. Projects in progress, chapter 3, was incomplete projects. And projects to finish by December 15th. The credit card caper. James speaks. A study in virality. Phew! And now for my bath. Progress. Posted on November 2nd, 2012 by Dan from holyboners.com. Good Lord, what a ride. It's November now and pedal to the metal. Today, I'm going to finish revisions on the team and tasks document. Roto artists are providing a constant flow of results. Money is definitely thinning out, but we'll find a way. Roto is beautiful. To be able to isolate whole characters and have my way with them. So much better than green screen because the actors are someplace. Sure, imagination is good. But if the actor's processing power is dedicated to the interplay of the moment, rather than imagining sets and props, shouldn't that theoretically yield more authentic presence? Again, taking a page from the Nostromo set and Ripley's merciless immersions on the original Alien. So here's a little fun test of Joe as hologram. I am also thinking about playing around with depth of field. Reshooting the shot in post, only $1 per frame. After frittering around with and dismissing a platoon of alleged roto artists, integrity finally showed up. In October, Risha and Veshin started bidding on jobs and cranking out results. They became the staple of my roto team. Remember Cody from episode 028? Around about December, he entered the scene, my last intern from the Career Tech Center's Film and New Media program. With productive artists to supervise. I was now a VFX supervisor for real. My name on the credits, yet again. Time for another pseudonym. Stefan Ganesh, a VFX supervisor to the stars. The Hindu god Ganesh is traditionally the overcomer of obstacles and was given responsibility for information technology in the last couple of decades. Stefan honors Steve Jobs, who gave Around Lake Michigan a laptop and the company behind a primary channel of my expression. Also my grandfather, Steve Redling, who painted the concrete naked ladies in his backyard garden white with red nipples and pubic hair. You've been listening to the Daughter of God cast, episode 032, Waves. That's a wrap on 2012, end of the great cycle in the Mayan calendar. Though for us, not the end of time. Along this strand of the golf ball slash multiverse, the spooling continued. The years just kept coming. Four more in change to get to the now in our story of the Daughter of God. When and where I am recording and roughly corresponding to your watching and listening, or maybe not. Because you might be hundreds of years ahead, listening to what the ancestors squeaked and squawked into their crude instrumentality, so primitive that only the sound and picture were captured, which is such a tiny fraction of the moment. How quaint. Shilajit and maca and all kinds of stuff. It's so good.